We're speaking now with Senator Jim Woodward. He is our First District Idaho Legislative Senator, and you're the incumbent. Jim, thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate the opportunity.
Well, let's start out with an introduction. Why don't you tell our listeners and potential voters a bit about yourself and how you got to Idaho and any professional qualifications you think would be of interest to them?
You bet, Chris. Thank you. Sandpoint and Bonner's Ferry boy. I've been here all my life. I went to school at the University of Idaho. I got a mechanical engineering degree, went to the Navy, and spent some time away with the Navy as a nuclear-trained submariner on the board of the USS Alabama back in the day, and then plus a few other duty stations, and then reserve time after that. Mobilized after 9/11 again, and so it was some more active duty time after 9/11. But we had already come home here to raise our kids here, where we know that it's the right place to be to raise our kids. So my wife is a teacher here. I have two kids. I own a construction company where we work both in, I call it simply rocks and docks. We work with moving dirt or out on the lake. And since I've been home and when I got done with the Navy, I started to look around to how do I continue to contribute to the community. And I've done that in a couple ways. I've been about a decade now on the Northern Lights Board, serving with that cooperative, electric cooperative. I also have served on the Sagal Fire Board for 7 years, so I got to much better understand our fire districts and the importance of that, preventive versus relying on your insurance company to take care of you afterward. And I serve now on the Mountain West Bank Board also. So, and then, of course, I've spent 6 years in the legislature as your state senator representing the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, first elected in
2018.
So okay.
I did four years.
Well, that's right. You did two terms. Yeah.
Two terms or 4 years. I had 2 years in the penalty box. Mm-hmm. And then I came back and I served the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let's talk about things that you think are most important in the, not in the rearview mirror, but looking forward, that you think voters ought to be thinking about as they decide who they're going to vote for.
Well, I think we need to get a little bit of balance back into what we've been doing in the legislature. I look and what I ask for from state government, or what I know that state government has to provide, are those basic services. Public safety, education, and transportation really are oftentimes my focus. I serve on the Education Committee, and I serve on the as vice chairman of the Joint Finance and Appropriations Committee. And there are many things we can do, but there are some things we have to do through state government. The projects we can't take on, building highways, providing law enforcement, fire, EMS, those kind of services. And so that's what I focus on, and that's what I think we need to focus on. We've had some contention around our budget process. I think we've got a little bit out of balance. You'll hear the claim that I didn't vote for a tax cut last year, and that's absolutely correct. I voted for two tax cuts back in 2020-21 timeframe. I voted for three tax rebates, so that money came back to us as Idahoans, so we got checks back from the state government when there was more money than necessary. I voted for a homeowner's exemption and supported that when we raised the homeowner's exemption back 5 years ago. And voted also for this past year for more homeowner property tax relief. So I have been very supportive of minimizing our tax burden, but at the same time, I saw us coming into a situation with the income tax affecting the general fund and our ability to provide those basic public services. So what happened, what happened last year, we cut about $250 million out of the budget just with that one income tax cut. The fifth in 8 years, right? So I said I've supported tax cuts, but I didn't support this one because I thought we were going too far, and the result was we didn't have enough money this year. And so what happened, we took $250 million of income tax revenue away, and we took over $250 million out of the transportation budget. That's money that would normally be going to the county, to the city, and to the state transportation department. That money's not in there this year because of the tax cut last year. And so when I look at what we want to do as a state, now we're not taking care of some of those basic services. It affects us in our quality of life. I think we need to have that balance. We are growing as a state. So when someone says no increase in budget and they say $0 increase, that's different than saying, let's match economic activity with state expenditures. And over the last decade, our state economic activity has almost doubled. It's gone up by 95%. And at the same time, our state spending has gone up by 75%. So we're not actually keeping up. We're not, so is that on this path, we have fewer troopers per Idahoan. We've gone reduced the number of troopers we have from about one trooper per 4,200 people down to one trooper per 6,000 or more. We haven't increased lane capacity on the state of Idaho highway systems over the last 20 years.
Even though we're growing quite a bit.
No, we've the population in a 20-year period, the population's gone up by 33%. And we've increased the number of lane miles, highway miles out there by 1.9%. Everybody can agree with that. They know that because if you try to get on Highway 95, you know it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we see it right here in the small community. Yes, if you go down to Coeur d'Alene, you see it magnified.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So we're not keeping up. And yet at the same time, the far right is crying that budgets are going up. Well, yes, budgets are going up. Idaho is a different place than it used to be. Let's not raise taxes. Let's match. That's why we use percentages. We've been cutting the percentages. And so then we're taking away our ability to match the systems in place for us with what's going on in Idaho. We need to find that balance again.
Well, let's dig in on that a little bit more. So this year was a big one of wrestling with the budget because revenues were projected to come up short. I guess they actually have been coming up short this last year. And the legislature and Governor Little enacted a series of bills for budget cuts that reduced funding for most state agencies and departments by 4% this year, 5% beginning in fiscal 2027, which starts in July. And, you know, this was a series of bills. I can't ask how you stood on each of those bills, but one bill that affected budgets for many agencies was the House Bill 559, which has Idaho conforming retroactively to the federal tax changes in the One Big Beautiful Bill Act that the Trump administration passed into law last year. How did you shake out on that particular one?
So what we like to do in Idaho is keep our tax code in alignment with federal tax code because it makes it simpler for Idahoans to file taxes. And that was the question this year because we were outside the normal time frames. The One Big Beautiful Bill came in the middle of the summer. Normally federal tax changes come earlier in the year and then we have more time to implement them. So I did push back on the implementation of that in fiscal year, in the current budget year, because you saw we made a bunch of changes to the tax code right during the middle of tax season. So our tax commission that we trust to implement and implement these changes and to interact with all the Idahoans out there who are trying to file their taxes, they were asking, let's hold off 1 year. And I was supportive of that, but in the end, that didn't happen. We, in committee, I opposed that, but when we got to the Senate floor, I ended up, I did go along with that. And part of that question really was, when the One Big Beautiful Bill also took taxes off of overtime and tips. And so that I know that that's important to people. And so that was part of the weight that the weight in that decision making. So I ended up supporting implementing the One Big Beautiful Bill. It did create a little bit of a challenge to get that all done in time. I think I haven't heard a lot of big problems, so it looks like it's playing out all right. But we do want to keep our Idaho tax code aligned. It just would be nice to have a little more heads up.
Mm-hmm. What do you predict for next year? Do you think that we'll be on a more even keel, or do you anticipate that we'll have more revenue or less revenue than might be projected?
Idaho is strong, and we continue to see people here coming here. Idaho is growing all the time. I mean, 40 to 50,000 people per year come to Idaho. We're down a little bit from where we peaked, but we have 2 million people now, not 1.8 million from the last census. We have a lot going for us. And when those people are coming here, they're bringing retirement savings oftentimes. So we have a lot of strength here in Idaho. But we also know that the world is unstable and the national level. And so that can still have its effects on us. The gas pump here shows it. And so we will have to be very cautious and thoughtful and deliberate in our budget process going forward.
Okay. Before we circle into some of the specific bills that came up this year that I'm curious about, any other things you'd like to, you know, open mic, tell folks about with what to look for in this particular campaign?
Well, I think maybe you already said it. Let's remind everybody, May 19th is the primary.
Yes.
That's coming up less than 30 days. And this is, as we know, often the primary results are the results, because we'll go into the fall election where just not contested at the same amount level. And so people have the choice to make, just the same as last time, or I was chosen to represent the community. I hope to go and do it again. In fact, this is the fourth time I'm squaring off with the same person. And I believe that people are seeing that there's a difference between someone advocating for predictable and stable government, trying to provide the basic services, versus an activist, an ideologue that is not necessarily voting in the interests of the community. Because oftentimes those votes are opposed to what the community would like to see.
Well, let's explore that one a little bit more. In your last race with Scott Herndon, your opponent in this race, mm-hmm. It was the most expensive race in the state. Each of you raised over $100,000, according to the reporting I saw. How do you respond to vote? And some of that money came from out of state, or from big organizations, if you will, not necessarily individual voters or donors. How do you respond to voters who might say, hey, taking a bunch of money from these special interest groups is going to make you beholden to them?
Sure. Well, oftentimes we talk about PACs, or political action committees, which is a special interest group.
Headquartered out of the states, but have a big presence here.
Yes, mm-hmm. And in Spokane is not that far from Idaho. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's have kind of a corollary question there. So the Idaho Freedom Foundation, it's a statewide conservative lobbying organization, and it appears to have a lot of influence on legislators, works with individual legislators to write and introduce bills, and they give scores on legislators. And the IFF score for you that I saw most recently, correct me if this is wrong, was 52%. There's kind of a two-piece question here. More generally, do you believe a legislator's primary loyalty should be to a specific ideological scorecard or to the consensus of their local constituents? And how will you work with the rest of the Republican caucus, including those that you disagree with, to get legislation passed for District 1?
So the first part of the question, talking about the Idaho Freedom Foundation, the other group is the Citizens Alliance of Idaho. Some of these groups that have out-of-state money, and they push us hard. They want us to take a pledge and say we'll follow them. That's absolutely not the reason to be in the legislature. I'm here because I'm representing the 52,000 people who live in Bonner and Boundary counties, and their interests are in my heart, and they are, it's the reason I'm involved in this, because I grew up here. I love the place. I've always enjoyed all the people. And so I'm representing Bonner and Boundary County, not the interests from out of state. Idaho has become this petri dish for politics, because we have a smaller population in many states. It's easier or less expensive to advocate for a policy and then say that, hey, we got this done in a state. But it costs a lot less to try and implement a policy in Idaho with 2 million people than it does to try and go do it in California with 55 million people. And so large donors like the Koch brothers and others, they spend their money here trying to push a position. When you look at the donations from the Citizens Alliance of Idaho, and they have $400,000 coming in one contribution from back east, that's not Idaho. Mm-hmm. And those aren't Idaho. That's not what's best for Idaho. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, let's come back to some of the bills that came up before the legislature in the last session. And one was House Bill 913, which calls for the state to implement work requirements by the end of the year for adults that are enrolled in Medicaid expansion in order for them to receive benefits. It was a House bill, but it came before the Senate because it did get passed. And how did you vote on that one?
I voted yes on work requirements. I think that it's certainly not a foreign notion that if you're receiving assistance from somebody, you want to try and earn that assistance. Now, we have people who truly, I visit different areas. I've been to the assisted living, to restoriums, to behavioral health institutions. We have people who truly have to care, and we take care of them as Idahoans because they can't take care of themselves. So that's a separate and distinct piece between somebody who needs a little bit of help for a while, but also has the ability to return, provide some return back to the other taxpayers in what benefit they're receiving while they're in a time of need.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Next bill, House Bill 561, it called for a $2,000 a day fine for government entities that fly unapproved flags on government property. Now, this impacted us up here because Bonner's Ferry flies a Canadian flag, has for, I don't know, possibly generations, because we're the closest to the Canadian border. And that did pass. But it was amended, and I believe you put forward an amendment that made it possible for Bonner's Ferry to fly the Canadian flag because of the historical precedence that is there. But other entities, such as Boise, they have to stop flying flags. They fly, apparently, an LGBTQ pride flag down there, and that which they will no longer be able to do on government property. Where was your take on that particular?
Yes, so House Bill 561, that really is, it's a response to a previous bill that was written last year on, and that's a political battle that has gone, so that's a two-year-old political battle in Boise that really shouldn't affect us because it doesn't involve us, but the way it was written, the words matter, the details matter, the way it was written, Bonner's Ferry became collateral damage, and so I had to go and advocate and share with some of the legislators the importance of that flag. First, they told me, no, it doesn't matter, that's fine. I said, no, actually it does, and here's why. And we talked about the amount of trade between Idaho and Canada and how that occurs in Boundary County and those cross-border relations. And so we pushed hard. And that stands in real contrast. I stood up for the community, and we actually got results on it because I had to push pretty hard on some of those legislators. And while I was doing that, prior to that, my opponent, Scott Hernan, went to the city of Bonner's Ferry to their city council meeting and told them that they were, you can look at the text of what he said. He went up there and told them that they were no better than all the people back in the liberals back in Minnesota or something crazy like that. Mm-hmm. And told them that they were breaking the law by flying the flag. And then, even better, that when I was getting those changes made, then he was texting other senators trying to oppose what I was doing, and his proposed solution was that the city of Bonner's Ferry should lease that property and let the Chamber of Commerce fly the flag. That was his solution. Doesn't that sound very similar to leasing War Memorial Field and letting the festival do what they want to do, which we all know that he opposed at district court and at the Supreme Court? So really a lot of hypocrisy in this one that was playing out in the background.
Hmm. Well, there's some backstory right there. We're going to run out of time in just a couple minutes. I'm going to squeeze in another one here. So school choice, the legislature last year passed a bill to allow some public funds to be used for private education. I guess the question would be, with that happening now in Idaho, where at least a portion of taxpayer funding is going for private schools, education. How do you balance this desire for parental choice in education with the constitutional mandate to maintain a uniform public school system? And specifically, would you support diverting public funds to private or home schools if it means less funding for local rural school districts?
Well, I'm on the record for voting against House Bill 93. Well, I did that because there's not enough accountability in it. Right now, you could describe the accountability there as a shoebox full of receipts that no one ever looks at, and they're tucked away in a closet somewhere at home. Our base obligation does lie with our constitutional requirement to establish and maintain this K-12 system of schools, and that's where my priority is. I still support education for all kids in Idaho, but we need to take care of that K-12 public school. If people have the means and they want to, and a desire to do something, educate their children outside the public school system, I'm glad they're doing that because they're taking that interest in their own child's education. We need to make sure that we fund the K-12 system adequately. That would take a lot of pressure off our property tax system. If the state were fully funding the K-12 system, then we wouldn't have this battle going on over property taxes that seems to...
Specifically, override levies that almost every school district has to pass.
Yes, and it rears its head every year or every so often here when the economy is strong. But yes, we have the supplemental levy system that schools are asking all the time. And so there's a whole bunch to that. But you know, my opponent is proposing that we get rid of property taxes entirely. And that's not that. That's like taking the pendulum clear out to the edge. What we need to do is fix the system we have, which is fully funding public education, and then taking care of the homeowner's exemption to help people with the affordability of their own home. But first shed that public school system burden back and put it back on the state. Mm-hmm.
Well, we're officially out of time, Senator Jim. Is there anything that you'd like to add, or let us know how voters can get in touch with you to find out more about your campaign?
Sure. The website is Woodward for Senate. Of course, I'm out and available anytime. Happy to talk. My cell phone is on the website. I truly want to say I want to keep Idaho the place that, so my kids can enjoy what I have enjoyed here. We've been here a long, long time, and it's a unique place. It's changing. I acknowledge it's changing, and so therefore we have to make some changes in how we take care of Idaho, but we still want to keep the place as best we can.
Jim Woodward, candidate and incumbent for Idaho State Senate, thank you for taking time to speak with us.
Thanks, Chris.